Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. What better way to spend what I like to call the perineum of the year, the bit between Christmas and the New Year, in the company of me and the country's leading football finance expert. Kieran, I hope you had a lovely Christmas. It's pointless me asking you that, Kieran, because as our listeners know, we recorded this back on Sunday the 19th. For those of you keeping track, I am halfway through the second bottle of wine, so fingers crossed, everybody. We hope you had a lovely Christmas.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a time, as we know, of great uncertainty. We hope you're able to go to football and that there will be football to come. Again, it's all pointless speculation, Kieran, because producer guy Three-Line whipped us into doing this on... It's a whole week till Christmas. I've got nothing to do. A bit of shopping. I'll have happily done. Never mind.
Well, he's got to count his money before Christmas.
That's going to take longer than this.
And that will take quite a few days.
Yes, of course, it'll take quite a few days. We'll, yeah, because then he's got to count it and then he's got to move some of it to somewhere where they won't look, basically. It just feels really, I feel like I should be saying to you, how was your Christmas? And you should be regaling me with lovely stories of carol singing around the tree and what a beautiful present the Baroness gave you, and Finlay having wonky chops, but I none of it, because it's
or you could take in the mickey out of me for Brighton going 12 games without a victory if we failed to win last night.
Yes, and indeed, but Graham Potter still apparently next England manager, according to, yes, to the Guardian, won't give up. They've once they, it's like, no, Graham Potter, future of English football. They haven't scored since 2012. So it's a questions pod, Kieran. Apologies if there is news, then I'm afraid we'll have to catch up with it sometime in the new year. So if Tracy Crouch is now our Prime Minister, we will deal with that. We'll get to that. It'd be great if Tracy Crouch was Prime Minister, except she's a Tory. I keep forgetting that, Kieran. She's probably the nicest Tory I've ever met, and I've met a few, including our Prime Minister, who's
old.
Yeah, I looked after him when he did Have I Got News For You?
Did you?
I did. Let's not go there.
I nearly ran him over.
I
was out jogging one morning about 6:30 in the morning. I was teaching in London those days. And I was going along a towpath. And I think he was Foreign Secretary at the time. And he came along with, I think it was 3 or 4 guys who were his minders. And I wasn't going to budge, and he wasn't going to go budge. And he nearly went straight in the pond.
Whoa, they could have been his minders. They could also have been angry husbands just about to catch him up. Just before the first lockdown, Ali was company stage managing a play about Boris Johnson, a comedy. It was very funny. But they started with Boris coming on stage very smart just before doing a TV appearance and then tousling his hair, undoing a shirt button and pulling his tie. So I was able to say to the writer, was that a figment of your imagination? He said, yes, I imagine that's what he does. And it's exactly what he did.
Oh, he does.
Yeah. And Have I Got News For You? It was astonishing. It very, very smartly turned out. And who, just before going on camera, did all that and went out. At the time, he just seemed like an amiable buffoon, which it doesn't seem amiable anymore, the buffoon. But Kieran, this is one of the reasons we're not getting the BAFTA nominations, isn't it? Not that BAFTA will be spending the perineum of the year listening to this. So we have a few questions for you. And the first question comes from Craig Hall. Now, Blackburn are doing very well in the league. Well, they certainly were up till the 19th of December. But they are a club we are increasingly mentioning in. Mentioning? Bottle and a half. Blackburn Rovers, says Craig, have announced a £29.5 million share allotment in their latest accounts. What does this mean? Is it a way of passing on debt to the parent company? Is this an example of creative accounting in order to deal with losses and FFP?
Right, and in fact, Blackburn Rovers' parent company, which is called Venky's London Limited, have very, very recently published their accounts. They are losing huge sums of money. They're losing 400 grand a week, practically every week. And what you're allowed to do under EFL rules is that you're allowed to chip in via share issues to extend your financial fair play loss. So under normal circumstances, you're allowed to lose £15 million over this rolling three-year period, but the owners are allowed to put in more money, and the first £24 million that the owners put in through share allotments contribute towards FFP. So this is what the Venkies have done, and they've been incredibly benevolent owners. They put in well over £100 million into Blackburn Rovers. The aim is to get the club back into the Premier League. There are stories, and we don't know whether this is just a modern myth or not, that when they acquired Blackburn, who were in the Premier League at the time, that Blackburn were not at the right end of the Premier League, and the Venkies weren't aware that you could get relegated. So it came as a shock to them at the end of the season when they got knocked down to the Championship. But ever since then, whenever somebody's asked for money, they've stumped up. So it does help to cover the losses, and an element of it does contribute towards financial fair play.
It's always interesting, Kieran, that the expression creative accounting, it almost always implies nefarious doings, but everybody gets up to it to an extent. There's nothing wrong with a bit of creative accounting, is there, for most businesses?
Yeah, creative accounting is pushing things to the limit. Now, lots of businesses do play a completely straight bat, but if you are perhaps selling a company, you might want to make it look a little bit better than perhaps it would otherwise appear. And there is a little black book of tricks that we accountants have, which we can utilize, which makes sure that you do not disobey the law. But yeah, it's the equivalent of photoshopping an original to improve the appearance.
Yeah, you've got more than one little black book, Kieran. We know that.
Yeah, but one of them's in Russian.
Our next question comes from somebody. It could be Russian. I apologise if I've really insulted him because he doesn't want to be Russian. Jakub Zarnik says, and can I point out, Jakub, this is a really unfair question to expect somebody who's a bottle and a half of wine down. You weren't to know that it would be asked on this particular marathon session, but it's a tricky one. I may have to have a little pause halfway through. If you hear a glug glug sound effect, you know what's happening. Jakob's question is this: could you explain if capital investments in footballing infrastructure, as an example, recent £8 million expansion of Bodymore Heath training ground by Aston Villa, are excluded from EPL, P and S calculations, profit and sustainability? I was under the impression that they are, but the EPL rulebook only seems to mention amortization of tangible assets as allowable expense, not purchase of tangible assets, brackets, capital expenditure, close brackets. I think I deserve a round of applause, Kieran.
That is excellent.
Thank you. Yes.
What happens here, Jakob, is there is something very similar called amortization, called depreciation. And it is, in fact, identical to amortization, which begs the question, why do we need two names for the same thing? And in my experience is that if you call a single item two different things, it confuses the public, and therefore you can charge them extra money for the privilege of trying to explain it to them. So what happens in terms of capital expenditure, infrastructure spending by football clubs, is that this is spread over the life of the asset. And it actually benefits the club. Because if we take Spurs, for example, Spurs have spent a good £1 billion on their new ground and training facilities. And if that was only allowed to impact upon Spurs accounts for 3 years, then that would be fine. But they would make pretty big financial fair play profits for 3 years, and then they'd lose all of the benefit. What Spurs are allowed to do is to say, well, they estimate the new ground's going to last them at least 50 years, and they actually put through a £70 million depreciation charge, which is taking the cost of all of their CapEx projects and spreading them over a much period of time. So therefore, they effectively get a £70 million a year allowance against P&S or financial fair play, which will benefit the club on a longer term. So it is included. It's just not explicitly within the wording of the P&S rulebook. No.
Our next question comes from Craig Hollyhead. Craig has a question about his club, Walsall. He says, Walsall were purchased a couple of years ago by a new owner, Lee Pomlett. However, he only purchased the club, not the freehold, which, as a Palace fan, always sets alarm bells ringing. Pomlett said his long-term plan was to buy it, but I've always wondered how he could finance it, as it would cost around £5 million. What are his options, Kieran? He's got a few bob, but not £5 million going spare.
Right. Yes, the freehold is owned by the previous owner, Jeff Posner. In fact, I think it's owned by his pension fund. And in total, Walsall Football Club pay around about £450,000 a year in rent, in lease charges. Now, that'll be for all of their leased assets, but a substantial element of that will be going towards the Best Cot itself. And I'd say, as an away fan, days out in Walsall were always great. Just one of those grounds that was really old school. Used to love going there. What are Lee Pomlett's options with regards to acquiring the stadium? Well, he could do the same as a regular punter, and he could try to get a mortgage on it. But banks and building societies, as a rule, are a bit twitchy about lending to people associated with football clubs for two main reasons. First of all, football clubs lose money. So, rule number one of banking, don't lend to a loss-making business, because you might have to getting your money back is that much more difficult. Secondly, and again, we have discussed this before, if things do go wrong, do you want to be the local branch manager in the West Midlands who has to make that phone call to the finance director of Walsall Football Club? And I'm not saying this could happen. This is just using it as an example, and say, look, things haven't worked out. We want our money back immediately. If you fail to do that, look at the small print of your mortgage deal, and we've got the right to appoint an administrator, because you're immediately going to really hack off all of your local customers who are Walsall Football Club fans, who happen to be also customers of you at the bank. So you're going to lose a lot of custom. So therefore, the banks just go down the route. Why take on the risk? It's £5 million. To a bank is not a lot of money. The bad publicity that could cause, we're going to upset the fans, we're going to have the local newspaper showing my face in the newspapers as the bank manager who destroyed Walsall Football Club. So just simply say no, don't lend the money in the first place. So borrowing money is one route, traditional route, but I don't think that would necessarily work. You could go to one of these niche football lenders. We've seen the likes of MSD Holdings get involved with clubs, but they charge a lot of interest. I think they were charging Southampton Football Club around about 9.5%. They lent money to Derby County. That's not ended well. So that's not good. One option they could go down is to try to, Lee Posnett could put down an element of the money himself, and he then tries to crowdfund the rest. And you perhaps you get a named seat at the Best Cot for putting in so much money. You know, that could be another route which they could go down. But it's not easy, unless, and a final option would be, could Lee Pomlet find another investor who wants to take a back seat, come along to a few matches, and is willing to fund the club with an interest-free donation or via some shares which might have, say, restricted voting rights to prevent this person from taking control of the club.
I love Walsall, the town. It's a great place. I love the Arboretum. It's brilliant. The art centre is fantastic. Just don't make the mistake of suggesting that they might be part of Birmingham. They don't like that. Kieran, the irony is, if Lee Pomlet did own the stadium, would he then find it much easier to get a bank loan?
If you own the freehold, it certainly does help. But again, you know, banks, they look at risk, and they also look at reputational risk as well as financial risk. And that's why when you look at the accounts of most football clubs, they tend to have the vast majority of those, the clubs that have loans from the owners. And the ones that don't tend to have loans from owners have loans from big international investment banks who don't give a hoot about what the people of North London or Manchester think of them, because these banks are so huge they don't have to worry about a bit of reputational damage.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Our penultimate question on this short Perineum pod comes from Liam Blaney, and it's about a club that most London football fans always used to keep a kind of paternal eye on, and that's Barnet. And Liam says that he's seen some banners around the Barnet area demanding TK out, referring to the owner, Tony Cleanthus, who's been the owner for quite some time. Liam says, I'm not a Barnet fan, but they are my local team, and I was wondering whether these banners are warranted, and he is indeed a wrong'un, or is there anything in the accounts of the club that suggests he's not pulling his weight? Or is this more likely just fan anger in response to a very poor season in 2021 and the fact the club has moved out of the area, although not as far as Brighton moved once upon a time! Exclamation mark. He's been associated with the club for a very long time. I think back in the Barry Friday, was he owning the club then? It seems that he's been around for a long time at Barnet.
He's been around for a while, and it's difficult to work out. I mean, I'm old enough to remember going to Underhill for an FA Cup match. This would have been, I think, 1981, and when Brighton were in the old First Division, and we drew 0-0 with them. But it's one of those really horrible days, because whilst it was a fantastic result for Barnet, what had happened was that I think Enfield were playing Spurs on the same day. That match kicked off at 12:30. Spurs won that match, and then they thought, oh, we'll pop down to the car park at Barnet. And, 80s football being 80s football, there was this almighty scrap taking place both before and after the match. So it was a pretty horrendous experience. And for anybody that gets nostalgic about football in the old days, it wasn't a lot of fun at times.
Anybody who gets nostalgic about football in those days didn't go to football in those days for the most part.
Yes.
Certainly not away games. My abiding memory of Barnet is it was Attilio Lombardo's first game for us, I think. We played a pre-season friendly there, and the look on Attilio's face as he wandered out for his, the warm up was one to behold. But it's great. But it's, I mean, it's Underhill was a great stadium, and again, it's,
oh yeah,
they're a bit like Orient. It's I'm sure they Barnet fans get annoyed at being patronised by London fans. Although for Barnet, according to my dad, God rest his soul, for Barnet, see Watford, they weren't a London club as far as he was concerned. But we always did keep an eye on them. And when they first got into the Football League, they were a really exciting, swashbuckling team. But the owner, Tony Clanfus, I think he's always been labelled under the heading colourful, I think you could say, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, what makes me slightly twitchy is the proliferation of companies involved. We've got Barnet Football Club, we've got Barnet Football Club Holdings, and we've now got a new company, which I suspect is connected to the new ground, which is called the Bees Football Group. And once you start to get this Matryoshka doll scenario with lots of companies, one owning one and another one owning another part, trying to work out the bigger picture is quite challenging. But Barnet fans are no different from the fans of any other club. They don't actually want a responsible owner. They want a sugar daddy. And that's not having a complaint against them or anybody else. Some of the clubs that we praise regularly on this show, I'll get messages on social media. So, well, you don't have to go and watch them every week. You know, there's all this sustainable nonsense, but you know, we want to be promoted. You look at, you know, short-term versus long-term things. So, yeah, they've always had a very modest budget. Certainly when they were in the EFL, they had one of the lowest budgets of clubs in League Two. And that's a function of the size of the fan base, because that's what happens in League Two. You know, that's why Salford City are struggling a bit this season. They've got a natural ceiling, I think, for their fan base. Yes, they've got the benefit of having the class of 92 influence, but if anybody's ever been to Salford, well, Salford's a pretty red area of Manchester. And I know Salford City themselves play in red, and fair play to the people behind the club, but there's another club in red which tends to get a bit more attention.
Yeah, I'm always the lion on Salford's badge. It's a proper scary lion.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The last question, Kieran, on this short Perineum pod comes from David Casey. I'm interested to see your response to this, Kieran, but I think it's a difficult one for you to answer, because it's a kind of value judgment, really, rather than something you can necessarily based on statistics and facts. David says, I'm emailing with a question about my beloved Northampton Town FC. I'm really proud of my club and the work it's done in the community, and the fact I still have a club to support, given what we've been through over the years. And David, of course, you're right to be proud of your club. Northampton are one of those teams that most football fans probably don't know a lot about, but you should. I mean, they're a club with a great history. You know, Herbert Chapman came through Northampton Town, event, all sorts of things. Yeah, I used to love brilliant kits, always brilliant kits. Always remembered, of course, for George Best scoring 6 goals. But they're one of those clubs that goes under the radar, but historically they're a really interesting club, and they're the sort of club that the Football League should be proud of. But David has a question for you, Kieran. He said, we had the original Supporters Trust in the UK, and they were very helpful to the Palace Supporters Trust when we set it out. And yet a few years ago, we had the £10 million loan going missing under our old chairman. It looks like the £10 million that went missing and our stand rebuild sagas are starting to be sorted at last. But at what cost? And it seems that our chairman and our Supporters Trust are in a bit of a civil war over what is right for the club. Is there an answer as to who is right and who is wrong? That is a difficult question for you to answer, Kieran, but I think we deserve to have a crack at it for David's sake and for the fans, all those fans of Northampton.
Yeah, I think we've said on many occasions that communication, sitting down and trying to find common ground is always a good way forwards. What has happened here is that we've got, not dissimilar to what we've just been talking about with regards to Barnet, we've got Northampton Town Football Club Limited, which is in turn owned by a company called Northampton Town Ventures Limited. And then you get Northampton Town Ventures Limited, which is owned by a guy called Kelvin Thomas, who's around about 10%, a guy called David Bauer, who is around about 10%, and a company called Belle du Jour Limited, which is registered in the British Virgin Islands. Uh-huh. Now, with no disrespect, why would a club which owns 80, you know, why would a company based in the British Virgin Islands choose to buy 80% of a EFL, as you say, traditional club? Yeah, I've been, okay, as an away fan, I've got amazing memories of away trips, like we all have, and they're nearly all positive. And Northampton, you know, second round of the FA Cup in 1987, Gary Nelson scored twice. Any Brighton fan who was there at the day said, well, yeah, absolutely fantastic day out. So it's a difficult one because the Supporters Trust put out in July a pronouncement that they were unhappy with the owners. The following day, on the club website, came a letter, and this letter was signed by the full-time staff of Northampton Town Football Club, and it said, "We get on fine with David and Kelvin. We have not been put up to this. We think progress has been made." For people not familiar with what's happened at Northampton Town, there were prior owners who were given £10 million effectively by the local council, who didn't appear to have done enough due diligence, to put it mildly. That £10 million was supposedly to be used for the regeneration of one of the stands and to improve the infrastructure of the football club. The contractors stopped working because they weren't being paid, and what ultimately has happened to that £10 million is one of life's great mysteries. And you have to follow the money. The reports, which have been commissioned by the council, don't necessarily reflect particularly well on the council itself. So the club was certainly in a bit of a mess on the back of that. Under those circumstances, the club could have gone bust potentially, but that hasn't happened. And it does now have two owners. All I can say, as we said, I think on a few other occasions, stop the grandstanding and get talking and find out what your common views are. The trouble is, and this again isn't a criticism of people at either side, because I'm just as guilty of this as myself. You know, I've got some well-known long-term feuds that once somebody's decided they don't like you and you don't like them, it's actually very difficult to get the two parties in the same room together. And actually, if I was a bit of a misunderstanding there, you said something, I took it personally, and actually we've got some common ground. So I don't think either side is in the wrong, or I don't think either side is 100% in the right.
Yeah, there a couple of things about Northampton, the town, Kieran, people listening to this will know that I'm now nearly at the bottom of the second bowl. So two of these facts I can't really stand up. I know Eddie McGoldrick is from Northampton.
Okay.
I believe it's the Theatre Royal or the Royal Durngate, which I've performed at. I think it's the second steepest stage in the country. The Rake, it's a really steep stage. But my abiding memory of Northampton, and I can't remember which game we were going to, but it was called off. It was somewhere in the north, and we were just outside Northampton when the game was called off. And we thought, well, we might as well have a quick drink in Northampton. And we came across the Northampton Irish Club, and the quick drink ended the morning after. After booking a hotel in Northampton. So I have got very happy memories of Northampton, none of which I can actually remember. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to our always free to AirPod, then please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And please join us again on Thursday for the last of our pre-recorded festive episodes. I sounded a bit Craig Revel-Horde there, didn't I? Last, darling. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. the price of football.